Guys, we're trying something a little fun and new. We had such a good time during our VR episode interacting with our listeners and getting their best definitely dying stories that we want to ask you guys to share any stories you have with us. So if you have any stories about either thinking you were sick and being wildly wrong, or actually getting sick, or a wild injury story. Basically, if you have any stories you would tell at a party, if it was a party full of people who didn't mind a downer story, give us a call at our Definitely Dying hotline. The number is 323-388-3879. I'll repeat it. And that's 323-388-3879. And you can leave your story on a little Google Voice answering machine. And maybe we'll feature it on the show.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be fun? Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad. And we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair. And
my knee hurts.
My arm is kind of rash. Is that a rash? But I had Asian food and that makes me feel kind of sick. I got a thing on the side of my ear.
I haven't cried in 3 years.
Guys, welcome to another episode of Definitely Dying. We're so happy you're here. Ben, how you doing?
Yeah, tummy ache.
You have a tummy ache?
Yeah, I got it. I ate deep dish pizza last night.
Oh, no.
It didn't go good.
Oh, I can't eat pizza unless I know I'm not going to be doing anything for like 1 to 2 days, I feel like.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Pizza's good.
Pizza's so good. Where did you get it?
Masa.
Oh, yes. So you got to eat a lot because that's good deep dish pizza.
I did. I had my fantasy baseball draft last night. And it meant I had to sit at my computer for like 3 to 4 straight hours. And so, yeah, I ordered this deep dish pizza.
That's great.
The draft is like 23 rounds long, which is insane. It takes forever.
That's nuts.
Incidentally, I don't like fantasy baseball, but I do like drafting. In general, I like I just like drafts. so I do these things. Yeah, and so I got a I was like, all right, this is going to be a treat. So I ordered masa and there's no deep dish pizzas should come in like a mini size, like a personal size.
Yes.
Like the way that remember back in the day, did you guys have Book It?
No.
The Pizza Hut. If you read a book, you get like a free personal pan pizza.
No, but that is like the most quintessentially 90s thing I've ever heard. I didn't have that, but I feel like I did.
Yeah. So they need a deep dish pizza that comes in personal pan pizza size. And then I would have pounded that thing. But they only come in a small, which is like 6 pieces of deep dish pizza. And I didn't eat all 6, but I did eat 3.
Yeah.
That's a lot of deep dish pizza.
Like if you were to see the cheese that before it was grated that went in that pizza, you basically like probably housed like 2 full blocks of mozzarella cheese.
Yeah.
It's so
no question.
Good.
And so what time is it now? It's like it's almost 2 o'clock here in Los Angeles. And I think I've pooped 4 times today.
Honestly, God bless you though, because when I eat a deep dish pizza, it will be the reverse where it would be like 3 or 4 days before I poop. Yeah. Yeah. Which like, so anytime, like whenever I go to Cleveland to visit my family, like I poop or like to visit like my cousins and stuff, they have all the best cheese based foods.
And Midwest.
I know I'm going to really enjoy myself, but I'm really Stocked not going to poop for a while.
Yeah. So today what happened was I actually thought of you.
Oh, that's really nice. While you were pooping?
Right after I pooped, actually.
Thank goodness. Finally, people are starting to understand my brand.
So I pooped. It was really early in the morning. It was like 6 in the morning. Yeah. And like, so I pooped. And then I knew I needed to go back to bed, but I also knew I had to poop again.
Oh,
so I did this thing that I do which is I set up a bed next to the toilet in the bathroom. And
that's
just
like what you do when you're very sick.
That's what I do almost every day.
No, Ben.
But today I was thinking about it because I had like really wrecked the toilet. And I was thinking about this article that you had told me about that, like, I remember it had something about like toilet plume or something in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It so was tell about, the audience like, about it.
Oh, so I read an article on, you know, some very reputable news source like USA Today or something that was apparently like a toilet seat cover in a public restroom is not helpful at all in keeping germs away, which I kind of always like. I've never been a toilet seat cover user, and I always put my butt right on a public toilet seat.
Yeah,
I just like feel like I understand that it's like not
do you wipe
the
it?
Best. No,
why wipe it?
Well, no, and you know what? The article said that's worse because basically the biggest risk in a bathroom is like transferring fecal germs from like your hands to your mouth. You know, basically
right.
like a bathroom is a high risk zone just because there are a bunch of things you're touching that might have poop germs on it.
Mm.
So like, so if you're wiping a toilet seat, you're getting your hand so close to that toilet seat. I don't want to drag my fingers right around a toilet seat.
Well, but you know, I'm using a paper product.
Yeah, but like you're getting it, your finger so close to the toilet seat that and that's always been my, my sense of this, and I've always thought I was kind of wrong, like but I just like had like nasty public bathroom habits, and but this article was so affirming because basically it was let me find it, okay. The reason a toilet seat cover is actually worse is because it's absorbent and like all the germs and stuff that you're trying to protect yourself are so small they can pass through paper. They're like, you know, I guess a plastic seat cover might be better, but like also, I don't know. And the biggest risk is just after the toilet flushes. Mm-hmm. That's when, and I love the quote about this, bits of fecal matter blast into the air in aerosol form, a phenomenon known as toilet plume.
Right, yeah, new toilet plume. I knew that had to be the term, yeah. So that's what I was fearful of, was that, like, so I put the toilet seat down, but it wasn't, like, going to protect, like, there's a lot of, there's a room for the plume to get
plume.
Out.
Yeah, room
for plume. If you've ever... if you've ever been affected by the plume, let us know. Like, if you got a fun, pink eye story or.
Give us a hashtag room for plume.
Yeah. Room for plume.
Yeah.
And, I seem to have survived the plume at least.
Thank goodness. Yeah. And are you going to be pooping the rest of the day, or you think you're good?
I don't know. I've got some like gurgle in the stomach.
Okay.
But, it's hard to say where it'll go. It's one of those, it's the kind of poop that, it announces itself as a presence immediately, but it doesn't necessarily give you an indication when it's going to explode.
Uh-huh.
It's just like a loose sitting grenade.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
If you liked this conversation and you want more, stay tuned. We probably won't talk that much more about poop, who knows?
There's no evidence that we're going to talk about. Like, you would think that was a setup for this episode. We might. Like conversations about poop, we might have one.
We might have one. There are several podcasts that definitely will have one. So if you definitely want poop, listen to a different podcast. But if you want something that's a, you know, conversation where it's always a possibility, stay tuned.
Definitely poop elsewhere. Definitely death right here.
Right here.
Maybe poop also right here.
Should we start the podcast?
Let's do it.
Great.
Guys, we got a great, great guest for you today. She is a recently graduated member of our MOD program here at the UCB. She was a writer for the team Nephew. She currently is a writer for Dear White People, which will be coming out on Netflix April 28th in just a few days. You got to check that out. We're so excited to have her here in the studio. Leanne Bowen, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Leanne.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Now, we always, like, start the podcast with, like, just, like, a breezy question to get into it. Okay. Leanne, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
Shit. I would say not that much, so probably, like, a 4. But I think there's a period of my life when it was, like, actually, there's a very specific period of my life when it was, like, at a 10. Should I talk about
that? Yeah, tell me. Yeah, please.
All right. So in college, I went to UC Santa Cruz, and I was a little, like, I just wasn't committed to the academics, and I was doing a lot of drugs. I did, like, a lot of weed, and then I got really into acid.
Oh, man.
And this is 15 years ago, so I'm far from it. Yeah, so, but yeah. It'll seem a little scary. At one point, I was like falling. I was falling out academically. I was like on academic probation for 2 semesters, and then finally, they're like academic detention. Like, you're done.
Wow. Mm.
And I was like, oh, I don't care. I live in Santa Cruz. I am like on the beach. And
truly, yeah. Santa Cruz is built for you not to care about anything
else. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's where hippies retire.
retire. So I was doing so much acid. In 1 week, I did like 7 hits of acid, and I was like, I'm not seeing visuals. I was like, just drop it into my eye.
Is that even a thing?
I was convinced it was a thing, or me and my friends were convinced of a thing, but it's not a thing. Like, if you can't see visuals on acid, then you just are not a person that can see visuals.
But there's a logic to it. Let's go directly to the source. Let's stick it in the eye.
Can you explain, like, so how? I don't know anything about acid.
Cool.
What is 7 times, like, dropping acid 7 times in a week? Like, can you analogize that?
Oh, one tab of acid is like 11 hours of your hallucinations.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's like 77 hours in a week of hallucinating.
That's like hallucinating.
To be fair, I think it was pretty, like, mild. Like, it's like mild, like, you know, green acid or whatever. Real
the
chill.
Kind you stick in your eyes.
Yeah, the one you can stick in your eye. And after a certain point, you reach this, like, if you're tripping for so long, you reach this point where you're just, like, at this plateau, and you just, like, are there, and you can function, and it's just, like, kind of like, ooh,
what is
fun.
It? It just feels
okay,
like
so,
fun?
If you do...
Madeline just did the most casual little shoulder bop that you did.
When you take acid, you turn into an ant dancing at a wedding.
It's not like brunch with your friends.
Acid sounds fun.
So the first time I did acid, it was crazy because I took acid at a party at night, and then we had to drive from San Jose to Santa Cruz over this crazy windy hill, and it was at night, and you're just like, cars are rushing by you. I felt like I was in Tron, like lights are just like zooming by you, and it's this curvy road. So that was really intense, and you feel really in it. But after doing acid for a long time, you can kind of function, and you're like, oh, you know when you're tripping out on something. And at that point, I was just like, kind of like, it was just kind of fun.
Yeah.
Things would trip out, but I could kind of like shake out of it and like function just slightly. So that's where I was at. And that was after about a year, maybe like 6 or 7 months of doing acid, just like socially.
Yeah.
But that week, I don't know what it was. That same week, my friend was like, hey, I found this flower. I heard it's like hallucinogenic. We should smoke it. I was like, I don't know what it was. And so
we found this flower.
She heard this flower was hallucinogenic. She's like, I saw it online, and I saw it in this, like, in front of this house. So she just picked it. And I don't know if that did it. There were so many other factors. But I think it was also like, I was getting kicked out of college and I was about to lose my apartment. And I had like this slight insane like breakdown, and it was a breakdown where I was just like, I just like cracked, and I guess you could say they were not schizophrenic tendencies, but psychotic,
like a psychotic episode.
Episode where I felt like, oh, I'm the center of the universe and I can control everything around me, and everything is affected by me and what I think. And And then I thought, like, and then I started, like, doing crazy shit, like, connecting dots to, like, oh, there's all, like, I'd be on the freeway and, like, yeah. there's too many champagne cars on the freeway. I'm like, something, color cars, like, there's something yeah, going yeah. on. And then I just got into this, like, headspace where, like, there's a conspiracy, someone's trying to kill me. And so I told my, like, my dad, I was visiting my dad that week. It was insane, too, because also my cousin and my little sister were visiting me that week.
Oh, no.
So I was taking care of my cousin and my little sister. And then my boyfriend flew up to visit me. Oh, I feel like it's all coming together right now. There was just so much going on. And I had to drive to my dad's. And I think I just cracked. And then I was like, I told my dad, I was like, I think I need to go home. And I didn't mean Santa Cruz. I meant like my mom's home.
Uh-huh.
So he just like scooped me up and took me home. And
to Santa Cruz or to your mom's home?
To my Riverside. We literally drove down like,
oh,
like
that.
Oh, my
gosh.
Day. And I just left my apartment in Santa Cruz. I left everything. And I just, and it was like this, it's probably a year long process of just like coming back to center. And like, I went to therapy like once and I was like, I don't trust this therapist. Her eyes are blue. And it was just like, it was just this real weird, crazy process where I was like afraid to go to sleep because I thought someone was going to kill me in my sleep.
Gosh.
This is very terrifying. Okay, this yeah. is terrifying, right?
This is yeah. I mean, okay, it's cool. terrifying, but like terrifying. Also fascinating so, and exactly so, what we love to
so
talk about.
So I was like thinking of like constantly yeah. thinking like I was threatened. Like there's,
yeah.
you have this feeling of this constant threat. So it's like paranoia and then like agoraphobia. You're afraid to go outside.
Wow.
My doctor had to prescribe me Valium so I would go to sleep.
Oh my gosh.
And then one day, my mom was really cool. My mom, so we were watching, this is a long story.
It's
okay,
a great
cool.
story. Please.
So
keep.
We're watching A Beautiful Mind. Do you remember that movie?
It's a perfect movie to watch with someone who's like having like some like mental and
yes,
emotional problems.
Exactly.
It's, yeah.
yeah. Well, it kind of was because yeah, yeah. my mom just like tapped me on the shoulder. She's like, "See, he can deal with this." Like, like sorry, I'm.
I love.
She tapped me on the shoulder. She's like, "See, you can like do this. You can figure this out." And I was like, and as soon as she said that, like, I kind of have a background with like psychology courses. I was like, "Oh, it's just brain, my brain, and chemicals in my brain." So I was like, "Oh, everything that is going on is not real."
Oh.
And so I was able to like, "Oh, I just need to like chill out and like I don't know, just you just
yeah,
yeah like as soon as you're you know, like, oh, these chemicals in my brain are making me paranoid. The pain
yeah, yeah.
is making me blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
so,
just understanding where it comes from.
Exactly. I was
it's amazing what,
yes.
how that just shifts everything.
It does shift everything.
Yeah.
And it like helps me later in life. Like if I deal with stress now,
yeah.
if I deal with anxiety now, I'm just like, oh, these are just processes in my brain. So
that's amazing.
I hope this isn't too heady for anyone.
No, this is not even a little.
Yeah. So it yeah. was. So yeah, it was like this, like year long, just like reacclimating myself to like life and stuff. And since then, okay, I was like, I think I could do acid again.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I could do this again. I was like, I was so stubborn. I was like, no, I could do this again.
When?
And
how much
it
later?
It was fucking like a year later.
Oh, no.
And I did mushrooms. And I was like, nope, I can't do this again.
Did it have the
yeah,
same? What
it was
happened?
Kinda, it just,
yeah.
I just got super paranoid.
Yeah.
And I just got like in my head. And it was like, people tell me like, oh, people have theories that like my first episode, like just this is so weird and it may not be true. Just like carved new paths in my brain to like,
oh,
to,
yeah.
like, you know, to like, I don't know, to like paranoid, like,
yeah.
you know, it's like
yeah.
if you experience, you have like a sense memory
yeah.
and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and I did shrooms and I did it. I just did shrooms like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, so you're back.
I'm back. Yeah.
What
I'm
was
back.
That?
Wait, so how long did you go without doing hallucinogens? With just 1 year,
yeah,
you said?
No, okay. I did it for without 1 year, and then I did it again, like, twice. And I was like, oh, I can't do this. And then, so I stopped for a full, like, a good, like, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And then I think I just grew, and I got into a good place. And
yeah.
I was like, I, like, smoked weed socially
yeah.
again. I stopped smoking weed for a long time because
yeah.
that was kind of like a trigger. But I think I just got better,
yeah.
and I'm like I've grown as a person.
Yeah.
I've done
sure.
a lot of stuff, so yeah, I'm pretty like okay now.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's yeah.
no, you felt so. It feels like all of like you're sort of like big acid week, kind of like like triggered a lot of like
sounds like a VH1 show.
Yeah.
big acid week.
Yeah, it's that panel show where like
it was a crazy show. I was watching it. It was crazy.
I want a VH1 panel show that is just everybody on the most acid and like commenting and like trying to make a quip about like a YouTube video.
Yeah.
Did you have like so before like you kind of had like that breakdown or whatever? Like, did you have tendencies to feel like nervous or anxious or
not
like
at all. No, not
that
at all.
That is fascinating.
Not, like even in the slightest bit.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean that doesn't surprise me because it sounds like quantity is what got you. Like would you say that you have an addictive personality?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. That's what it's because I mean seven. That's like I remember I ate mushrooms at my dad's house like five nights in a row.
Oh wow!
And basically the same a similar sort of thing happened.
Yeah.
But
what happened?
Eventually panic. Mostly, I think it's I think a big part of it is that like what you described if 7 days. I mean, we're saying that it was maybe a lower dose, so we're not going to say 11 hours, but still, even with weak acid, approximately half of your waking days would have been spent tripping out.
Yeah.
And just having that divide where 50% of the time you're dealing with the reality that the rest of us have like are embracing, which is like a big deal. The fact that like we're all buying into this reality is like a huge part of existence.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest of the time you're tripping out.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing about tripping, at least in my experience, was that you would have a series of moments where you would think to yourself, I'm not going to be able to hold on to these great thoughts when I come out of this, and becoming sort of terrified that like the other time, like the bad things were not when we were tripping. It's when we weren't tripping. It's like when we give in to like the group mindset. I remember being at like a Feist concert in taking mushrooms at a Feist concert in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
And like my big panic was like thinking that all these people were speaking to me in a foreign language and then realizing that I was in Amsterdam. I was surrounded by Dutch people and French Canadians. Literally none of them were speaking English, and that was like a rational thought. But like sitting up and like staring up at this balcony, and in my mind it was like a set piece from Deadwood or something. Like it looked like, you know, like a 19th century sort of like a saloon or something like that, and thinking like, it's a real bummer that I'm not going to remember any of these thoughts, and just knowing it and feeling very sad about it. And that like over an extended period of time, like at my dad's house, like I would get naked and roll around. It would be like 3 a.m. and I would roll around on the floor on my my dad's carpeted kitchen and just this way and then this way and then this way. And it was just like, what a nice feeling.
Yeah.
But having that realization, it's like, oh, no, like I would have to do so much acid in order to really understand the world the way that it was intended to be understood, and that instead I was going to go back to like being my normal self, and like I would have a very adequate existence, but that it wouldn't be like there was something extreme that was happening when I was tripping that felt like I needed to know that thing. And so for a period of 5 days or so in a row, I was like, I craved that thing and I chased that thing.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, that like if you go full bore, if you eventually get to that place, you're never coming back. You're going to go out of your mind.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's
my long
story. I think
that's
exactly what happened. And I feel like there was this point during my trip where I was like, I don't know. I don't even know what it was. I forgot what it was. I was
that's
just like staring
thing.
At this thing. And I was like, bye. And it was like, but it was, I remember right before I was like, bye, I was like, oh, that's a really interesting, like, I felt like I had this breakthrough.
Can you make that voice again?
Like, bye.
We instantly entered the puppet show version of your trip, and I loved it.
It was crazy. My little sister was with me and she was doing acid for the first time.
Oh.
And she's like, she got really scared. She got scared at one point. She was like, Leanne, I see a wolf in the ceiling.
Oh.
And I was like, and she was kind of scared. I was like, oh, well, just talk to it. And she's like, okay. And she started just talking to it.
That's so beautiful.
And it was just like, yeah.
When was this? Which trip was this? The very recent one? Or
This was the first back.
So we're talking.
That was the week of the 7 days that I was
So, right. Because your sister
was visiting
you. And how old was she at the time?
She was 18.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the legal age to take acid in this country.
That's it.
Yeah. It's so crazy too because so much real stuff was going on. And like, if you were like, if all those things were going on, minus the acid, and you'd said you'd had like a break, I would have believed it and not been like, that wouldn't have surprised me at all.
Yeah, I think it was like, I think in real life there was a lot going on, and it was building, and then just adding the acid added this like really surreal, like turned in this surreal crazy thing.
How did you feel about college at the time? Were you like, I mean, obviously you said you weren't doing particularly well, but were you in, because I remember I went off to college and I had a very similar sort of like academic experience. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was like, it was my real social awakening. Like that was where I made friends for the first time. And it was, it was almost a better learning experience to the interpersonal stuff than I ever would have gotten from education.
I wish I liked it more. I think, I mean, UC Santa Cruz is awesome. Mm-hmm. I was in this cool school that was like for like social justice and like diversity.
Oh, cool.
It was this really cool school and all my friends were great. But at the time I left high school and I was in a long distance relationship with my boyfriend, so I was always on the phone, always wanting to go home, always. I just did not take advantage of this great place I was in.
I think that's so often the downfall.
Holding
on to something from back home. You know, everyone goes off to college and they want to remind, you know, like that first year everyone says like, oh, I have like the best friends in the world. It's like everyone feels that way about their friends, but there's something about disconnecting from that past.
Absolutely.
Not past world. I mean, it continues. You know, like they say, make new friends, but keep the old.
Yes,
one is silver and the other is gold.
Yeah, which still is weird because there's a hierarchy.
Yeah, there's a hierarchy. That's what
one is intrinsically more valuable.
Folks, the great takeaway is that friendship is a hierarchy.
It should be like one is gold, the other one is white gold.
Gold.
Yeah. Now, he was definitely like bronze.
Bye.
But you were missing him. But you were missing him hard at the time.
Yeah, every month I was down. I went down to Riverside, or he came up to Santa Cruz. It was just like I wasn't in it. Yeah.
Did you finish? Did you like go back and finish college? Or?
I did. Well, when I moved back to Riverside, and I was like still like dealing with myself. Yeah. I went to RCC, which is Riverside Community College.
Oh, cool.
And I took a lot of undergrad stuff, and then. Oh my God, I'm going to put all my whole relationship out here. But I really wanted to get into biology. I was like, I liked biology. And I got back together we broke up and then I got back together with my ex. I was going to go to, he moved to Seattle. So I was going to go to the University of Washington.
Uh-huh.
And then we broke up and I just did this crazy thing. I was like, I want to get into film and TV. And so I went from biology to film and television.
Wow. Yeah. Did you have an interest in film and television before?
I liked to write when I was young, but I had never, when I was really little, I used to like lie in bed and dream about like winning an Oscar.
Really?
Like shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, while I was in Seattle and we were going through a breakup, one of my good friends went to the Academy of Art.
You went to Seattle?
I did.
Did you start classes,
no.
Or were you just like laying the groundwork?
Laying the groundwork.
How old were you?
I was like 24.
Okay,
23, 24. But yeah, you, if you're a resident, if you live there for a year, it's cheaper if you wait a year to go to school. So I was waiting a year. But one of my good friends went to the Academy of Art in San Francisco and he was doing like compositing, like lighting and compositing.
Oh, cool.
And as soon as he graduated, he got a job working on like Superman.
Cool.
So he immediately jumped into the business and it was so easy for him. I was like, hey, that like it looks like you made it work. So it just like sparked me. And I was also like, I need to get out of this relationship. I need to get out of this relationship. So I was just like, you know, instead of like cutting your hair and cutting bangs, I like decided to switch careers.
It was a mistake because the bangs thing always works out.
I know.
No one's ever disappointed in their bangs.
Yeah.
No, everyone's always happy when they get bangs.
Yes. I was like, curly hair bangs. It's a great idea.
So you left Seattle.
Yes.
And moved back to here.
Yeah. And I went to the Academy of Art for Los Angeles. No, I didn't go here. I went to the Art Institute. Because he went to the Academy of Art. Yeah, okay. So I went to the Academy of Art in Los Angeles. It's a for-profit like technical school. Like there's like 40 of them across the country.
Oh,
yeah.
Was it cool?
It was cool.
Yeah.
A lot of the teachers were like working in the industry. I think that's cool. The benefit of going to the one in LA. But like there's one in like Phoenix, and like it's like you don't learn anything.
Who teaches that one?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was great. I learned a lot of technical stuff. I learned like editing. So that was kind of my craft getting out of there.
Yeah.
And I was an editor. And then while I was there, I had a crazy screenwriting teacher who like, have you ever seen that movie Kentucky Fried Chicken or Kentucky Fried Movie?
Oh no, I'm aware of it.
A guy who did Airplane, and it's like just a grosser, raunchier version of. He was like, it was kind of inappropriate,
because
it was actually it was great. but he was a real weirdo, and
did he write that movie?
He just wanted us to watch it.
Oh, he just made you watch it.
Made us watch it. And
he just liked it.
Yeah, and there's like a scene where like a guy sticks his balls through a glory hole, and it's just like, it's really raunchy. But he like pushed me towards comedy because he was like pushing me to like, you're funny, like write more shorts that are
That's awesome.
Yeah, he really kind of nurtured me in this cool way.
I thought this story was going to take a much worse turn.
Yeah, he pulled his balls out. It was crazy.
You know, it sounded like it was very just like, so he killed himself in front of class. Yeah. And then I thought it was funny. Yeah. So UCB.
UCB, here we go. And so I had a friend. Mystery Team came out at the time, and I went to see Mystery Team. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that they were all UCB guys.
Yeah.
Cool.
So my friend was like, hey, you like Mystery Team? Did you know they all did UCB? And then I looked up UCB. I thought the website was cooler than Second City.
You're right.
And Dominic Dirkus is teaching Sketch 101. And he had one slot left in his class. I was like, oh, I feel like this is meant to be.
Yeah.
That was the beginning.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Thank you.
That's such a cool path.
Yeah. And I had never seen live improv before that. So I was like taking his class. I was like, oh, I guess I'll go see Shitty Jobs. And I went to see Shitty Jobs, and I was like, what the fuck is this? How is this improv? How are they making all this
stuff? Yeah.
It was so, and I just like fell in love, and I was seeing shows 4 days a week, and you know, the UCB student thing.
UCB took the place of acid.
Yes, it did. Dude, you're talking about addictive personalities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, I'm addicted to probably like going to the gym.
That's a good one.
And writing.
Yeah.
those are the two most popular addictions I could ever think of.
It took me a while to get there.
I looked up like good addictions to see if there was anything called a good addiction, and there's nothing is referred to as every addiction is referred to as bad, but they do have what are referred to as healthy addictions.
Oh.
And I also think that healthy addictions is probably a fallacy as well, but it seems like there is a component to addictive personalities that you're just not going to be able to overcome. What it means is that you're an enthusiastic person. Now, to some extent, we can latch ourselves on to the negative thing, but the enthusiasm isn't the negativity. It's just where we channel it. And so the number one, a healthy addiction is supposed to be exercise, and creativity is on that list as well.
Cool.
Work is not, but creativity is.
Yeah, I think that too.
So, you know, if you know who you are and you can say, okay, I'm going to be this way, what are the best things that I can channel it towards, then I think you get a happy existence. Otherwise, we just convince ourselves that we're broken, and you're not broken.
Yeah.
You do things a particular way, and when we're young, we often let that particular way own us instead of, you know, taking ownership over and real appreciation for something. Like, it's led to good things in your career.
Yeah.
It'll lead to a healthy lifestyle. Why wouldn't, you know, if you have an addictive personality, don't think that means that you know, that you can't be solved. Find things that make you feel good about yourself, that when you do them over and over again, you don't feel like you're broken. You feel like you're fixing.
For sure. That's it.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to get up out of here. Peace, fuckers.
Peace, motherfuckers.
I ain't addicted to this.
I'm just going to go do a bag of shrimp.
I know. Yeah. You know, eat a sack of shrimp. Roll around on a carpeted kitchen. Whose kitchen has carpet?
Yeah.
I didn't want to interrupt you because it was more interesting than this, but just to backtrack for a moment, is your dad's kitchen truly carpeted?
It was at the time. That's so 70s.
Yeah, that sort of makes sense. Rolling around.
It was cold. I cracked the fridge open so I'd get the cool air coming out. Rolling, baby.
I got to try that next
time. Give it a shot. Yeah. I mean, I had just finished watching the not at all funny but to me hilarious movie Pushing Tin about John Cusack and Billy Bob Thornton playing air traffic controllers.
I haven't seen that.
Not a comedy.
Yeah.
Really?
But it was hilarious to you.
Oh, so funny. I laughed through every second of it.
The logline sounds like a comedy.
No, it was the opposite of a comedy. But then again, the Feist show wasn't particularly funny either, and I was laughing hysterically throughout that as well until I got terrified, and then I kept falling on the ground, and a woman approximately one-third of my size would have to pick me up while speaking to me in French Canadian.
What was your dad home at all during this week? Or
yeah, he was, but it would be like 2:30 in the morning, and because I've told this, I don't think I've told it on this podcast, but I'm sure you've heard the story that resulted from. I won't tell the whole story of it, but one night, the Pushing Tin night, I took a bunch of mushrooms and I stayed up basically all night, and after rolling around on the floor of my dad's kitchen for a couple of hours, I got an intense craving for bacon, but it's 2:30 in the morning and I was tripping on mushrooms. There was no way for me to get bacon, so I had what at the time is, well, no, I'm going to say even now may have been the smartest thought that I ever had, which is that I could get Domino's to deliver me bacon on a pizza plate. And so I ordered a pizza with 5 times bacon on it from Domino's, and then they delivered it. And then the next morning I woke up and the whole pizza was intact, but there was not a piece of bacon on it. I had just eaten bacon off of a pizza plate. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Amazing.
So,
that's
yeah.
Honestly,
you've heard that
genius.
Story, haven't you? My bacon is a pizza plate story. Or pizza is a bacon
pizza
plate.
Is
yeah.
A bacon plate.
Yeah. So that was one of the 5 nights of. Yeah. So like I said, you have a lot of important thoughts when you're tripping. And then you wake up, you come back and you lose them all.
Must eat bacon.
Yeah. I've never ordered a pizza plate again in my life, and I regret it every day. I'm broken.
So do you have any like hypochondriac tendencies at all, or do you find that you're pretty relaxed about your health?
I think I'm like, and this is going to be serious, but yeah, I'm definitely terrified of cancer because I have just like my family has a history of it.
Oh.
So that's the one thing. But it's taken me to where I'm like trying to be a vegan and trying not eat chemicals and blah, blah, blah. So
it's like, pretty positive.
Yeah, it's pretty positive. But I don't know. I slip all the time. So far, so good.
Is there anything that when you experience it, you think, oh, this is cancer?
Like I'm afraid of like microwaving stuff in plastic bags.
That's smart. That's like I do it all the time, and while I'm doing it, I have the thought like this is
it's
insane.
It's like you know it gets like soft and hot. And chemicals are seeping into it.
And I'm just like radiating plastic, which already like I don't even the stupid thing with me is like I won't drink out of a plastic bottle if it's been in the car. Because like someone said that once and it stuck in my mind.
Yeah.
But I will microwave something in plastic and eat it right up. Which is so much worse.
Have you seen that? There was that study done about cell phone, like sleeping with cell phones near your head. So I try not to do that.
Oh, that's good.
So this girl, as she was somewhere in Europe, she woke up one day and she had trouble focusing on a test and she couldn't figure out. And she was like, oh, for some reason she thought, because she slept with her cell phone right next to her head. So she told her teacher, she told the class. So the whole class did this study where they set up these like little plants and put it next to a router. A wireless router, and then they had a control in another room, and the plants near the wireless router didn't grow, or they grew a little and they died. They didn't grow, and then the other plants did, and so they think that I don't know if it's radiation, but it's like waves and stuff.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I don't like sleeping with the phone next
to
me.
That doesn't seem like hypochondria. That seems sensible.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like that's like everybody when we like got our smartphones, nobody's going to get smarter after that. Like, so it's like why like it's like we're a little bit at an advantage because I feel like smartphones came out when we were like in our 20s,
yeah.
You know, but kids, I feel like they'll just never get smarter.
No. they just have their phones.
Yeah.
Have you, and you don't have to... if this is like not fun to talk about, we don't have to talk about it.
I'm edge of my seat over this question.
Yes.
Well, I just because you mentioned cancer, like, have you experienced a lot of death in your life?
Yeah. I mean, my dad's cancer story is insane. But I took care of him, so that was really
wow.
hard. So I can talk about it. I'm fine because I feel like it's a health insurance issue too. Mm-hmm. So my dad, he called me out one day and he's like, we're supposed to go camping. He's like, I don't really feel great. I don't feel like I can go camping. I was like, what's going on? He's like, I just have this lung infection. I was like, how long has it been going on? Yeah. He's like, a few months. And he was a vet, so he's like, I went to the VA and they said it was just like. Some like they just said it was an infection. It's fine. Something in my brain, I had like this little spidey sense. It's like I don't feel good about this.
Yeah.
So the next day I drove up from LA to Sacramento.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm taking you to the emergency room because I think there's something wrong. So we went to the emergency room and they were really frustrated with me because my dad didn't have insurance.
Uh-huh.
They were frustrated with me because they're like, well, he said he went to the VA. They said it was this. I was like, no, I don't feel great about this. So they did an X-ray and they're like, yes. He has cancer nodules throughout his lungs and liver.
Holy shit.
Yeah, dude.
Did you have any impulse to be like, I told you so?
I was. And also the news was just like.
What an insane confluence of like.
Yeah, it was really frustrating. And so that was like the beginning of June. And so I was like, okay, well, this is before Obamacare. So I was like, okay, I need to get you insurance. And pre-existing condition, even if we wanted to drop $100,000 on insurance, we couldn't buy insurance. So there's Medi-Cal, but the only way he could qualify for Medi-Cal is if he made $0. So he had to quit his job.
Oh my God.
He had to quit his job completely so that he qualified for Medi-Cal. Got on Medi-Cal, and there's this weird like fork in the road where I was like, do I take you to a county doctor now?
Uh-huh.
Or his friend was like, go to UC Davis. They've got a great program, blah, blah, blah. And they take Medi-Cal. So I was like, okay, let's try to do UC Davis. I took him to UC Davis. This was like mid-July. Uh-huh. And they were just giving him the runaround. And doctors literally do. If you have Medi-Cal or if you have shitty insurance, they just won't give you a great, they won't treat you.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, okay, we'll set an appointment. We'll set an appointment for August 17th. It was mid-July. We'll set an appointment for August 17th. And I was like, okay, that's kind of far away.
Yeah.
He passed away on August 11th.
Oh.
You're fucking kidding
no.
me.
No. So, but there's more going on. So at the end of July, all of his friends were trying to get him to do like medicinal weed.
Uh-huh.
Someone gave him this brownie, but the brownie was like, it said like 20 times. It had 20 times the amount of THC.
Oh.
And I think he just did too much and he like fainted. So, because he fainted, an ambulance took him to the doctor, and they're like, whoa, you have a lot of cancer.
and he was like, I knew that.
I know I have a lot of cancer.
The hospital put me on a fucking waiting list.
Yeah. But because we got him to the emergency room, they expedited the process because it had spread to his brain at that point. So he was on radiation. And when he saw a doctor in July, they're like, okay, you have about 7 months to live. And then when he went to the radiologist and they did the radiation, like, okay, you have like 3 months to live.
Mm.
And my dad just decided to go on hospice. He's like, the radiation it's going to your brain. So it takes this long, it's taxing toll. So I went up there and I just like hung out with him for 9 days and he passed away before his first scheduled appointment.
Oh my God.
So, the ACA is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's such a,
it was crazy.
That's so crazy.
It was pretty intense. And then my grandma's mom recently passed away from cancer a few months ago. So yeah, it sucks. I feel like everyone's going to get cancer.
Yeah.
I don't want to scare anyone, but.
No, I kind of feel the same.
Yeah, no.
I mean,
it's like,
it came about after like we invented all this stuff that like it's just we just keep inventing more and more stuff that seems to lead to it. Then, you know, and then we like, and it's not even just the inventions. It's like we eat the parts of the cow that seem to cause it. Like we just do all the things lead to it. And we embrace them as life.
Yeah, totally. Just like chemicals and like, everything. Pesticides, all that bullshit. So,
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
How old was your dad?
He was 62, I think. Which was crazy because he qualified for Medicare. But like he
Social Security. Medicare,
Social Security, but he like missed some deadline, and they're like, no, you have to wait a year."
That's
That's so weird. Crazy.
There's so much. It's so insane. The bureaucracy around just healthcare is like bananas.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's so. It's like, and then when you hear it's. What's like so frustrating is like the way people talk about it is so abstract and it like sounds so complicated. But like when you have like stories like that where you can like just have these concrete examples of like how these policies are affecting people and killing people. Like it's
totally
it's like unbelievable.
It's it sucks. And it's like. And even with Medicare or Medi-Cal, which are these like free programs, the hospitals know they're not going to make money off, so they have their own like kind of bureaucracy. You know?
I mean, just I think just general practitioners too. You know, I mean, you go in with you know because you know the Dr. Marshmallow is we won't use his real name because we don't speak very highly of him, but the doctor that that Madeline,
we both have the same doctor for. I have a new doctor now, but. I had this kind of bad doctor, and then I recommended him to Ben, and he's still Ben's doctor.
So, I mean, you go in, and if you don't have insurance, they make it sound like they're doing you this great favor by accepting, you know, $35 in exchange, but then they give you $35 worth of medical attention, which is like not medical attention. Like, you can't get medical attention for $35, which is an insane thing in and of itself. That, like, that, I mean, you know, that seems to be the great debate is, is medicine a right? Or, you know, is healthcare a right? And if it is, what they've decided is that $35 worth is, and you know that's like the cost of a band. That's like less than the cost of an aspirin at a hospital. You know, with insurance. I think the aspirin costs like $200 in a hospital.
I personally believe healthcare is a right. That's my stance on that. But I have an uncle who's very well off. And he has a bone cancer. And he goes to City of Hope, you know that. And he had to buy 5 pills for his, and each pill cost $14,000.
Jesus Christ! And he could afford it,
along with his insurance, great insurance.
When my grandmother was dying of cancer, there was this like, it's not the same, but it's like there was this crazy debate of like we were like trying to figure out when to put her into hospice because she was like in-home hospice care, but she was getting really uncomfortable and like moving her into the hospice facility was like, you know, a certain amount more expensive and it like was covered in a certain way if she like died within a week, and then if she didn't it was like gonna start getting like exponentially more expensive. And there was this like, it was like at the time, you know, I made like a game time decision of being like this. Let's just like get her in there. You know, like just to have her be comfortable now. But like there was this like, it was just so weird even thinking about like worrying about what would happen if she didn't die as fast as we thought she was going to die.
It's crazy. It's funny. It's crazy because, like, when you're in those situations, the last thing you're thinking about is money. Like, anything, whatever it takes, whatever we need to do, just do it. You really are on, like, this you're super
because you're trying to keep someone alive.
And then, and then, you know, you turn around, you have a bill for, like, $200,000.
It's insane.
It's crazy. It's funny where your brain is. It's just, like, whatever we need
It's just not, like, you're not, like, trying to, it's not like when you're, you know, buying a car where you're like, well, I guess like I don't need the nicer seats. Like, you're like anything.
It's crazy.
I don't sometimes I wonder like with speaking of the money part though, like the that like, you know, Magic Johnson and And, you know, having, I don't think it ever became AIDS. I think he just, I think it always stayed HIV. Yeah. But that, you know, like there was that, you know, people would say like, oh, sure, like magic can afford to have this like deadly sickness that like he can pay his way to all these stuff. But sometimes I wonder if it's like, no, Magic Johnson was an elite athlete. Like he is a physical specimen. Like, isn't it possible that like that maybe his money was going a little bit further than like, I mean, I'm, you know, I get indigestion and I could die. You know, like I'm a human ball of shit. He, on the other hand, is, you know, he's like. He's Magic Johnson. His, they called him Magic, you know? And like he's, so.
His immune system is like dunking on all the.
Exactly. Triple double. Sometimes I think magic gets a bad rap, you know? Like we decide that like certain, it sort of gets treated like the OJ thing where like certain people can pay for, you know, for a better defense or, you know, be it legal or medical. But no, I mean. Props to you, Magic Johnson, because I think he's given a lot of people hope, you know, that like that it would seem like such an imminent death sentence to receive that diagnosis. And now I don't think, I mean, it still is.
It's manageable enough, the technology. I mean, maybe he might have helped that
a lot. Sure,
sure. But it's manageable. A lot of people are in the same position now. Yeah.
Good work, Magic.
Good going. Yeah.
Congrats.
You the man.
Yeah. I went to your basketball camp and you were mean to me, but since then you've really redeemed.
Magic Johnson.
You redeemed yourself since, but still fuck you, Magic.
Have you had any health problems? Like, what's the sickest you've ever been?
Actually, if I'm in a health situation right now.
Oh.
A few weeks ago, I got strep throat really bad.
Ooh.
And my tonsils swole so big I couldn't swallow.
Oh, no.
And they're covered with pus.
Oh,
I have
still?
A picture of it.
Oh, can we post it?
Yeah, you can post it.
Will you send it to
so
we'll post?
Gross.
Yeah.
It's so nasty.
Oh, I would. That is thrilling.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
So I went to the urgent care and I opened and I had this really old, I think he's Polish. I don't know. This old doctor, he's like, okay, sicko, let's see. How you doing? And he's like, open your mouth. And I open my mouth. He's like, holy shit.
He's like, Dr. Stick fell apart.
And he just like sat back in his chair. He sat down in his chair. He's like, you got to get those things removed. I was like, okay. And so he's like, I'm going to put you on a strong penicillin. And after you're done, go see a doctor.
Yeah.
So I was on strong penicillin. I'm still like my voice sounds weird. It's my tonsils are still enlarged.
Can I see?
Yeah.
Oh, they're big. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Those are big. Have they always been that big, or they're still?
No, they have. They have always been this.
Yeah.
They've been slightly less big. Than this. So I went to a doctor, and he was like, "Well, I don't recommend We would recommend removing your tonsils if you have chronic strep throat, but you've only gotten it once.
Yeah.
So it's a painful procedure.
Yeah.
As an adult getting removed, there's a chance of bleeding.
Yes.
Like if you're, and so he's like, but the one thing that we would remove them is if you have sleep apnea, which is like, and he's like, do you stop breathing in the middle of the night? Yeah. Do you have heavy snoring? I was like, oh, yeah, I do all that stuff. So I'm going to go on this like sleep study where I take this machine home and plug it up to myself and they're going to like monitor me.
Whoa.
And if the sleep study says I have like severe apnea, they're going to remove my tonsils.
Oh my God.
But this was an issue when I was a little kid. I would stop breathing in my sleep and my parents noticed it and they took me to a doctor and they're like, "Oh, we need to remove her tonsils or her adenoids." And they just never got around to
doing
it.
They just never did.
Yeah, so I've had like sleep apnea my whole life.
Oh my God.
Remember when you told us you had no stories?
Yeah, I know. So, it sucks. Sleep apnea sucks. It's like you don't get good sleep, so you feel tired during the day. That's why I really like going to the gym because it like my metabolism and it helps me with energy. So I'm like constantly caffeinating myself.
Yeah.
I meditate. I do transcendental meditation.
Oh, cool.
Which is like a 20-minute nap. Two 20-minute naps. Yeah. For me, that's what it is. It's two 20-minute naps during the day, and that helps with my energy, too.
Do you have a word?
Transcendental
Yes, I do.
You
know,
we're not supposed to share. No, we can't
learn
it.
You do, too.
No, I don't do it, but Mike Hanford.
Awesome.
Yeah, he told me, he didn't tell me his word, but he told me to not ask anyone who does transcendental meditation for their word, that it's offensive.
They're not saying it.
How did you get into it?
So I looked at I wanted to do meditation. I was looking up different types of meditation, and that one, I went to an orientation, and it was like in Santa Monica, and it was very foo-foo. Ooh. It was like, so it was expensive too. Yeah. I spent like $1,000 to learn how to do this.
Whoa.
Which you don't have to do, yeah. I think, but it was, there was like the support system.
Yeah.
I like doing it.
You get hooked. You get hooked easily. Yeah.
I know. I guess this is another thing I'm addicted to.
Another good one.
And one of his assistants was like, this is the easiest way to get what you want, which is like if you want to relieve anxiety and blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And so I started 4 years ago.
Wow.
I've been doing it every day since.
And what is it? How do you do it?
So, you sit down, you close your eyes, and you repeat a mantra for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to train yourself to actually do that.
Yeah.
That is actually a hard thing to do, is your mind will wander. Mm-hmm. But you can't, don't judge yourself.
Yeah.
If your mind, it's what your mind does. So don't be mad at your mind for wandering. Yeah. Just always try to bring yourself back to your mantra. And my meditation teacher had this thing. He's like, imagine you're at a party and your mantra's at the other side of the room. Just focus on there's people are going to come. They're going to try to talk to you.
Yeah.
Maybe talk to them back. Sure. Just let things flow where you're not judging yourself. No negative feeling. Like you're not judging yourself. But just always keep your eyes on your mantra and always try to focus on your mantra. So that's what it is.
Nice.
Have there been changes in your life since you started doing
it? Yeah, I'm way more relaxed. I'm more focused. I don't get as anxious as much as I used to.
Yeah.
I'm a little more chill. I listen better. I'm a way better listener. That's
cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of? Oh, what were you gonna say? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I want you to ask your question though. So maybe I'll just come up with one. No, I'm just kidding.
I was just wondering. Were you having a lot of experiences with anxiety before?
Yes. And I think it's just fallout from my 10 years of all my drug use.
Fallout from
acid week. And then after my dad died, I was just like, I need to. My dad dying is this weird experience where you feel like you aged. After my dad died, I was like, I feel like a 45-year-old woman.
Yeah.
So that was it's really, I guess it's a bad, it's not a bad thing to say that was a positive thing that came out of it. My outlook on life.
No. Yeah. I think a positive thing can come out of a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I went home and just grief was just intense. Yeah. And I was like, I need to go meditate.
So it was kind of a direct.
It was a direct response.
I think that's great. I mean, the options would be escapism or, or really sort of channeling those emotions through a deep sort of inward.
Yeah.
I don't know what the word would be. Some sort of introspection. Yeah. That feels like of your two options, I think that you went with the one that allowed, I don't think that it's, you're not saying that a good thing came out of the death. You're saying that a good thing came out of choosing to deal with the death as opposed to running away from it.
Yeah. I'm glad. Yeah. I have my aunt is a child psychologist and she always is like, Leanne, I think you just need to grieve. And I was like, well, and she's always popping in with really good. Yeah. So she's kind of helpful with that.
Well, your aunt's here, actually. Come on in.
Hello.
Time to grieve.
time to grieve. because I just didn't know what was going on. It was this weird thing. I was like, I don't know how to process this.
Yeah.
She's like, oh,
how would you?
Yeah.
It happened so quickly, too.
Yeah.
Crazy. Quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. I did tell my boyfriend my mantra.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because he wanted to.
You have a current boyfriend.
Okay. Yeah. Because he wanted to meditate. And I was like, I don't think you need to pay $1,000. And this mantra is just, it's just words that you have no association with. So it's just a gibbeted.
It's not I will be powerful.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
You're not connecting it with with anything you know. And my teacher was like, don't Google it. Don't figure it out what it is.
Oh,
it's just literally just sound.
What if everyone has the same and that's why they won't let you look it up?
So it's just
oogie boogie, oogie boogie, oogie boogie. Want to play a game with us?
Yes.
Let's play a game.
Fun.
Yeah. This is a game that we play It's a kind of a quiz style game. Okay. It's called What's Shaken Baby dot 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 syndrome. We're going to give you the names of different delusions and syndromes, things like what's shaken baby syndrome. So most of them are going to be like purely cerebral, but some of them will have like physical manifestations. So I'm gonna list the name of the syndrome or the delusion, and then you and Madeline will work together to try to figure out what it is, and we'll see if you get it right.
Are these real?
Yes, these are all real.
Oh,
yes,
shit.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Fun. Okay.
Number one, Oogie Boogie Face. Go. Okay, that one's not real. Thing. The first one, this is correct. Frigoli Delusion. What is Frigoli Delusion?
I feel like Frigoli is the name of a person.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah, that's probably right. Like an Italian guy?
Yeah, Italian guy. Yeah.
You guys are on a good path so far.
And a delusion.
So what did he do? Can we get like a year?
Oh.
No.
Oh, man.
I don't have it.
Frigoli.
And it's a psychological.
Oh, it's psychological.
That's what I'm thinking, because it's a delusion.
Yes.
Yeah, right? Something Italian and psychological.
I feel like wine was probably involved.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Maybe he thinks something is wine when it's not.
Oh.
Grape juice? He's drinking grape juice. Yeah. I am drunk.
I am dead drunk.
Why?
It's like, oh man, you're a bad Italian. You're a Italian.
Maybe it's just being a bad Italian.
A bad Italian. They were also very Catholic. So maybe it was like he thought his water should be wine.
I'd like that.
Yeah.
Interesting. I like that guess.
That, yeah, okay, when you cool. think, you, yeah.
It's not even close to correct.
Oh, no!
But I love it. I mean,
that felt like such a smart.
I don't know what it was. That's what I loved about it. Is like, what about the two words Frigoli delusion was going to give you really any context clues whatsoever? Instead, you went with one that I kind of like better than the actual answer. Frigoli syndrome, named after the Italian actor Leopoldo Frigoli.
Ooh.
Who was renowned for his ability to make quick changes of appearance during his stage act, is the inverse of Capgras syndrome. Capgras syndrome is a delusion in which the sufferer believes that the people in, like, let's say we were married, that my belief would be, if I was suffering from Capgras syndrome, that you had been replaced with an identical double, and that you were gaslighting me.
Oh.
So this is the opposite of that. Is it a delusion of misidentification, and is characterized by a person's delusional belief that persecutors or familiar people can assume the guise of strangers, in that different people are in fact a single person who changes his or her appearance or appears in disguise. As in Capgras syndrome, Frigoli syndrome occurs most often in patients with schizophrenia, although it has been reported in patients with dementia or epilepsy and after traumatic brain injury.
Oh.
Again, the management does not differ from the treatment of underlying disorders and usually involves antipsychotic medications, although in cases of dementia, cognitive enhancing treatments and non-pharmacological approaches that diminish disorganization should be used. That was a little long.
Wow.
So if like Neo from The Matrix went to the doctor,
he's like,
no, there's this guy, Agent Smith. He can be so many different people. They're like, man, you got Frigoli syndrome. Yeah. Go home.
Yeah. Frigoli syndrome is also what you could call a series of unfortunate events. Those books are everywhere.
Oh, yeah, because that guy is always in a disguise.
Yeah. They always know it's
Neil
him,
Patrick
too.
Patrick Harris is always, like, he plays the bad guy, right?
Yeah.
New gaslighting.
Yeah.
He is capgrassing you.
Yeah. Girl.
We could combine it and make it grasslighting.
Grasslighting you.
Okay. Number two. What is apotemnophilia?
Apotemnophilia.
Apotemnophilia. Apotemnophilia.
Philia is you love something.
Yes.
But what do you love?
What do you love? Apotem.
Apoplectic is when you're so upset, right?
Yeah. Oh.
I wonder if the root is the same.
Are you like, you love being angry? Apotem.
Oh, yeah. Is it anger? Is it an anger issue? Is it rage issues?
You love like apotemnophilia.
I feel like it's like you love being like you're petty.
Yeah.
You love drama.
Yeah, you're a petty bitch.
You're a petty. You love drama. Is that it? Is it loves drama and is a petty bitch?
Also known as Real Housewives of Beverly Hills disorder. That is correct. No, it's apotemnophilia, also known as body integrity identity disorder or amputee identity disorder, is most likely a neurological disorder in which a person has the overwhelming desire to amputate healthy parts of their body.
No.
So it is sort of, it is drama for, there is a little bit of drama.
Yeah.
Chill out.
Girl, do not cut your perfectly good leg off.
I know. Just trying to draw attention to yourself.
No, but it really hurts.
I say this with 75% seriousness. I wonder if there is something about cutting your bangs that identifies in that same category where like there is a destruction. Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Remove a part.
And then to suffer for it.
Yeah.
Because no one likes their bangs.
No one likes bangs.
Yes.
Okay. No. You only
especially
Zoe Dish.
Yeah.
Oh,
guys, my bangs.
Okay. In which a person has the overwhelming desire to amputate healthy parts of their body. In extreme cases, sufferers amputate their own limbs or ask others to do this for them because few surgeons are willing to.
Should be none. But
because few surgeons are willing to amputate healthy limbs, patients often attempt to irrevocably damage the limb in question themselves, necessitating formal amputation. After amputation, most report to being happy with their decision.
They're
fucking happy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is a cognitive, behavioral, and aversion therapy.
To be like, oh, I'm so happy my arm's gone.
Yeah. That's so crazy.
That's chilling.
I know.
Yeah.
Literally bone chilling.
Yeah. Literally bone chilling. Your arm gets too cold. You got to take it off.
That would be a good way to.
You just like have it in ice. Yeah. That was the first thing I thought of was gangrene and.
Yeah. Okay. Number three. What is Mobius syndrome?
Is Mobius?
Mobius is an improv form, right?
Oh,
Mobius is an improv form.
Where you like start Mobius and improv is where you. I hate it. It's not fun.
You end where you started.
So you make like a crazy scene, and then you spend the rest of the scene like. Backwards justifying how you like someone was at the horse hospital.
That sounds really, really hard.
It's hard. My very first improv practice group decided we wanted to do a Mobius out of like 201 or something. I remember Drew DeFonso Marks was coaching us and it was garbage.
Was it like good practice? Like, I like do the hardest thing first and then like never have to do it again.
Not even because it's like very plot heavy. It was like hard for me because it's like you have to make it make sense and also then try to be funny.
Yeah. It's just like an extra layer.
Yeah.
It sounds really hard to do as a group too. Yeah. Like it feels like there are correct answers in this one.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what's this Mobius?
Oh, Mobius syndrome.
Syndrome.
Yeah.
Could you feel like you're repeating the same day over and over again? Or like,
oh, yeah, like 50 First Dates?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, she's in a Mobius, kind of.
Can we do that?
Is it like Drew Barrymore and 50 First Dates?
Is it Drew Barrymore First
Dates? Oh, so you're saying it's the syndrome that she had in 50 First Dates,
right? Yeah, she can't remember anything in 50 First Dates.
Or Groundhog Day.
And Adam Sandler still feels comfortable courting her.
Ironically, it's actually never been kissed syndrome. It's not. It's not that. It's a different. No, I'm kidding.
I'm so excited.
Groundhog Day syndrome. Mobius syndrome is a neurological disorder that affects people from birth and is characterized by the inability of its sufferers to form facial expressions.
Oh.
People with Mobius syndrome are unable to move their facial muscles, meaning they can't smile, frown, suck, or even blink their eyes. They are unable to move their eyes from side to side and have difficulty swallowing.
Oh.
So this is a rough one.
So you're like locked in.
Yeah. So this is one of those physical manifestations. Like this isn't just in the noggin.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the life expectancy? Is there a life expectancy on there?
That's a good question.
Oh, yeah. Can you Google it? Yeah.
Yeah. So what do? Do they just like sew your eyes shut and like you're done? Like, don't your eyes dry out?
Like, oh, yeah. Can you move your body?
It sounds like it's just the facial muscles. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess eye patches.
Very fixated.
So
on
you just
like, I'm so like, how does that work?
How would you not choke on your saliva? Also,
Sounds like there is some of that.
With continued proper medical care, individuals with Möbius syndrome who do not have serious life-threatening complications in their first years of life usually have a normal life expectancy. Yeah, there's like a quote from a guy who's like, "I've learned how to deal with it, and I have a full and meaningful life."
Mm. I hope that's true.
Good for him.
It feels hard to imagine that, like.
But does he really know the alternative?
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. Dude. I mean, I don't have friends. I've never had a serious relationship.
I'm living up.
I emancipated from my family at an early age.
Never watched
TV. I'm wearing two eye patches at all times.
Imagine. Going back to improv, imagine having this guy in the front row of your improv show.
It feels like Mo shows, you know what I mean? I've got a bunch of Möbius syndrome in the house. That's the best in passive aggressive thing to say during a show, like a stand-up show. Looks like a lot of people got Möbius syndrome.
What a great theme show. Super Möbius. Just an audience full of people who can make no facial expressions.
That's kind of like doing a podcast.
Yeah, it's true.
You have no reaction from anyone.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Even when people listen to it at home, no reaction whatsoever. Okay, this is our last one. What is busy lifestyle syndrome?
I guess I have that. I'm a busy girl.
Doing acid 7 days a week doesn't count.
Oh, no. I mean, my brain was busy.
That's very true. Your brain.
Busy life syndrome?
Busy lifestyle syndrome.
I assume someone that has a busy life.
When like someone asks, how are you? And you're the kind of person who's always like, Busy.
I have so much going on. I have these emails I have to answer.
I just got so much to do.
Oh, you're referring to dickhead delusion.
Yeah. Well, it's a syndrome, so it's a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
When you think you're busier than you are,
or you want to be busy.
Or you're busy and it makes it so you're not happy anymore.
All right. You're busy.
You're compulsively busy. You busy yourself to distract yourself from your inevitable death, and it becomes impossible to extract yourself from that compulsion.
Oh, I think we can. I feel a lot of people have this.
Let's invent it. I'm going to come up with a term for that called misery. Busy to the point of misery.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a great word.
Great word.
Misery.
Give us if you guys feel that you are busy to the point of not enjoying your life, tweet at us with the hashtag misery.
Misery.
B-I-S-E-R-Y.
Yeah, yeah.
Not B-I-Z because we're not stupid.
I know.
Okay, busy lifestyle syndrome. This is a real disorder which causes forgetfulness and lack of concentration in people who take in too much information daily. A good example of busy life syndrome happens when you can't remember why you just walked into the kitchen or another room.
Oh, I get that all the time.
Everybody.
So, yeah, so it's pretty common. Like, this isn't isn't like one of those one in a million kinds of this is more, you know, like in the same way that I feel like in 1 year's time, there will be certain Trump syndromes that are affecting pretty much all of us. That busy life syndrome is just that, like, there is so much information coming at us at all times. I mean, I notice it on a daily basis just having two tabs open.
Yes.
Forget why I went to that first one and just immediately, you know, something pops up or, you know, all the clickbait, like that sort of stuff. That we're so inundated with information that it makes us impossible to remember intention.
Yes. Yeah. As you were saying that, I was like, it happens most often where I'm like, oh, I need to look up this thing or pay this bill.
Yeah.
As soon as you open up a tab, you're deep in Facebook or Twitter or something.
I had to start a a to-do list for my to-do list. Like, this is what I'm currently doing. Like, it's not just like these are the things that I have to do. It's just like this is the list, and then this is right now what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then once I accomplish that, I'll cross it off, and it has to go away entirely.
Yep.
But the idea that, like, I would divide it into episodes or chapters where it's like, I'm going to work on my screenplay for a little while, and then I'm going to go and do, it has to be, like, consistent or it just has to go. With the TV writing specifically, I like in the class, one of the things that I really push is for people to is to isolate the universe of their script from the universe in which they live. That if you're attempting to live Madeline's life while you're also attempting to write the character of Janie's existence, these are two different universes entirely. And so,
So don't be like flipping back and forth between your script and like your email.
Yeah, exactly.
These
emails do not exist in the world of your script. Yeah. They only exist in the world of Madeline or for Ben or Leanne or Zig.
That's
Zig ones exist in all of our universes. Yes.
Zig is paper only. He's got a stack of paper sitting around him. It looks crazy.
Zig handed us paper invitations to his birthday party. And we RSVP'd yes. Yeah, I would like to know. I want to meet people with the opposite of busy, like the people who are like who just have too much focus.
That's like Adderall syndrome.
Have any of you done Adderall before?
I mean, I've taken it like prescribed.
How would you? Would you? Because I've like recently come upon someone who's like, "Hey, do you want to do Adderall?" Mm-hmm. But I would only do it for productivity.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you write creatively on Adderall? Is it more to like get stuff done, like a get stuff done?
I took it a long time ago, when I was in college, and it was more like productivity. Cool. I don't know if I do think that like it keeps you pretty attentive. So like I do imagine that like. I don't know that it would enhance the creativity, but it would probably keep you from forgetting certain things that, you know, that feeling where you're like, you're driving and you have this great idea and then you get home and you're like, well, that's gone and I'm furious forever. Yeah. Like that it might help you to overcome that.
But I wonder if it would like eliminate some of that like micro wandering that is like helpful in having ideas. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
I noticed that I could like remember. When I took it, I was living in New York, and I would like walk down. You know, I'd walk down the street in like the East Village or the West Village, past all these brownstones, and like I could remember like every address, like every street address.
Oh, that's crazy.
Which was not at all useful. No. I wasn't going to any of those places. Literally zero of those places.
So
where
you
want to
like really like have your script have a lot of very specific detail. Yeah, a lot of phone numbers. Yeah.
Madeline, you described this house for three pages to describe this house.
Kate walks in the room, 28. Her email address is k14@gmail.com. 2942 Emerald Avenue.
Is there a thing about like not letting stuff go?
Is. I'll try to find that one. Yeah. That is interesting. Mm. And I always think about that. Like the combination of those two. Like when you know it'll be like a Private Eye movie or whatever, and like they show up at like the bad guy's house, and the bad guy always remembers like the specific address where like the drug dealer is taking place. Where it's like I don't remember my own address. Yeah. Like how is it that you're like churning out these digits like they're nothing?
Yeah. Totally. No one's ever like, hold on.
Yeah.
Let's bring realism back to him.
I just got
to
call my friend Frank. Frankie. It was after we went and saw Fregoli's Delusion. When was the name? What was the name of that place? Yeah. Was it Tito? Tito's apartment. Oh, you're right. No. 1468 49 Way. So that's our quiz.
That was fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is there anything before we go that you want to like plug? Do you want to tell people how to follow you on the internet?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter. I've if you want to read a lot of like socialist tweets, I've bridged myself on the social media world to like socialism and supporting DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America.
All right.
But yeah, so I'm at Leanne_Bowen, B-O-W-E-N. Dear White People comes out on April 28th. Watch it. It's going to be fun.
I'm so excited to watch that.
Netflix.
Man, that's going to be so good. I can't wait.
Okay.
I really can't wait.
Thank you, Leanne. Thank you for having me. Thanks. You guys are great hosts.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.